This is Chris Evans with another Storage Unpacked podcast from Pure Accelerate. This time I'm joined by Ivan. Now you're going to have to tell me how to pronounce your name again.
Yeah,
Yannakone is what I was going to say.
Yannakone is good. Thank you so much for having me, Chris. It's great seeing you again.
Yeah, really exciting. So, last time we used to talk to each other was when you were at HP, but you've been with Pure for, well, HPE, but you've been with Pure now for 6 months.
Yeah, it's been 6 months. It's been very exciting, as you've seen from this announcement.
Absolutely,
it's been,
six
very busy months for me.
So you focus on the software side of Flash Array?
Correct. All the manageability, all the software features of Purity, that's what we call our main operating system. And this is Purity FA, and we also got Purity FP, that is a part of Purity that runs.
Do you cover both, or do you just do the...
I just concentrate on Flash Array.
Right, okay, brilliant. So let's talk about the actual, the announcement in terms of what's come out, because it'd be interesting just to try and summarize what is a huge number of new features. I think there was a chart was up on the screen yesterday, and there was a little sort of diagram, and I think there were 16 new features.
Yeah, no, I'm also keeping, having troubles keeping track of everything, but there was at least 25 features across both FlashBlade and FlashArray.
Right.
Specific to FlashArray, there's at least 16 new features.
Okay.
All of them are pretty unique, meaning that, it's features that other vendors, other competitors have and have had for quite some time. But we've made them in, with Pure style, right? So
Yes. They're,
sassy, faster, exciting.
And that's been really interesting to see, because let's take the first one that I can think of, and we'll try and cover some of them, because there's too many to cover in one podcast, perhaps. But Active Cluster, which is basically active-active replication, synchronous active-active replication, done differently.
Yeah, very differently. And I think if you look at all the VAR software features, replication is the most difficult feature to implement, right?
Yes.
It's just because, hey, the data is leaving the array.
Absolutely.
Is it going to get to the other side? What is going to happen? And also, replication is not only a very difficult feature to build, it's also a very difficult feature to implement, to set up, and so on. And this is also one of the reasons why the team, when they start thinking about what problem we're trying to solve here,
Yeah. They
went for this active-active implementation. That is really the most hard problem to solve, but it's also the one that brings the majority of benefits to the customer, right? Because if you're building an active-active data center, you don't have to worry about, okay, how am I going to load balance my workloads? The fact that we have a witness or mediator in the cloud, hey, I don't have to worry about the fact I have to have a third data center where I have to deploy this witness, right? So we know some customers will want to have that option, so we will provide that, but we're pretty confident that majority of customers will love just to have the mediator in the cloud, right? So it's all about how you build something that is way better than anything else that was in the market today.
Yeah, so in terms of how it works, it is genuinely, literally, active-active. It's the ability with two volumes across two arrays to simultaneously be able to write to them
Yep. In
at the same time.
Correct. They read-write. Of course, there's always a concept of what we called a leader and a follower, because
Okay. You
want to have that right ordering. But yes, the entire implementation is active-active, and we support both for uniform configurations, where basically you have the host that can speak to both arrays,
Okay. But
also non-uniform configuration, where you don't have a stretch fabric between the two data centers.
Right.
And it's just because we see customers deploying this in both ways, right?
Okay.
And not all customers can afford to have a stretch fabric.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that can become really expensive. So I think the demonstration we saw yesterday, was it yesterday or was that Monday?
Monday. Yeah.
Showed a VMware environment where you can effectively present what looks like a consistent data store across two sites. It's effectively the data store's stretched across both sites, and
Yeah. It's
the same data store.
The same WVM, same serial number.
Yeah.
The ESX cluster does not know that it is a stretched volume, right?
Yeah.
It just has no idea. We completely isolate and make that transparent to the hypervisor layer.
So the hypervisor just thinks it sees multiple paths to the same LUN. Just happens that some of them are coming from one array and some of them are coming from
exactly.
Another. Okay. So that seems really interesting. Now, from a slightly negative piece, that's not negative, slightly cynical side, I would say going after active-active like you did, it's probably a good thing to go after somebody like EMC, because it allows you to take out discussion of SRDF and VPlex. But actually, which is a cynical way of looking at it, but actually, in some respects, customers are going to want to more and more be able to look at an environment and say, I don't care where the storage sits, I want to be able to write to it across my data centers, or probably another angle which got mentioned yesterday within my data center. So I might want rack availability, or I might want to do migration, or I might want to do other things rather than two data centers in the classic style.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's also one of the reasons why we did not call this, we did not name this feature synchronous replication.
Right.
Because it is much more than synchronous replication. Yeah. So the ability to do stretch clustering is one use case. But you also have the ability where you can just do data mobility, right? And I know it's something that is very important to you. So, and that just can happen in a data center, right? Especially if you look in the US, where the majority of data centers are really at much longer than metro distances. You know, the rack availability or the ability to actually move volumes between sites or between the same data center to different flash arrays is very important. And that ties in very nicely with our new AI engine, right? That is Meta. And that ability to determine, hey, does it make sense to move this workload to another flash array? Can the other flash array even accommodate this workload, right?
Okay.
So there's a lot of very exciting things that we've got planned with this functionality, right? Is stretch clusters one of them?
Just one of them, yeah.
Let's talk
about Meta then, because that in its own right is an interesting idea. Now, you could say it's not new because you see InfoSight from Nimble, that's the obvious one. But it sounds to me like you're trying to do something a bit more creative again with that.
Look, this is absolutely true. I think that the ability to leverage telemetry data is nothing new, right? My former company, I think FreePAR, we started back in 2005. We had hundreds of thousands. But what is very interesting about what we're doing at Mintur is that we are actually putting a lot of skin in the game when it comes to machine learning, AI, because we're building a product that is the FlashBlade that is going after those markets. So those are technologies that we understand deeply. We understand who our buyer is, we understand who our customers are, and engineering really understands the buyer's algorithms, right? I think, you know, what we've seen Brian Gold speak about the tape, you know, on
I think
the,
he might be on the stage now. I mean, yeah. For everybody who's listening, we are actually sitting right behind the stage, and I think Brian's actually on there now, or was just on a minute ago.
Yeah, so I think we have a huge advantage in really understanding the algorithm and some of the things we want to get out of machine learning. And I think that the most interesting thing, I don't know if you saw the mini keynote that Sergey presented yesterday, where he actually went in depth on what are the various algorithms that we're using, is that today we've got this concept of fingerprints. So a fingerprint is nothing less than, a pattern that we detect, how can I anticipate a problem?
Right.
But a human being is actually stitching all the pieces together. In the future, that stitching of the pieces together will be done by the machine. So, you know, we want to be able to get the fingerprint before it even exists. So this is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's another company doing that, but I think we've got an edge here.
So that's an interesting one, because it's that level of AI about the data that's more interesting, that you now get something that tells you things like, if I add this workload to this array, what will the result be? How will it impact it going forward? So now it's not just about moving stuff around and monitoring it and saying what happened, you're saying what will happen, which again is that AI piece.
And again, in a world that is getting more and more into automation, you want to be able to, you know, tell your automation engine, this is how much capacity I need, this is how much performance I need, and then we can put the better placement of the data.
Nice round of applause there.
That was for me?
Yeah, I was going to say not for you, I think. For whoever was that was on stage. So let's talk about, say, vVols now, because vVols is a technology that seemed like it could have been quite clever originally. The industry didn't have really that much of an adoption of it for a number of reasons, but you've come in with what is VASA 3.0, I think?
Yeah, VASA 3.0.
So, and again, a different take on vVols.
Yeah, so I think vVol has been around for quite some time now. I mean, talking about it for probably more than 10 years almost, right?
Yeah.
2009, something like that. It was released in 2015, but it wasn't really widely adopted, right? And I think the main reason is the lack of ecosystem support. I think first it was that they had some sort of limitations and snapshots and things like that. Then it didn't support replication until the latest 6.5
yes,
release.
Of course, yeah.
And also it took time for all vendors to be able to comply to the spec, do the testing, increase the amount of volumes they support and things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this is a good time for us to release Vivo just because the ecosystem is more mature.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a lot of interest, right? So there's no doubt in my mind that the data store concept and model is going to still be around for a very long time. But for, you know, I see a lot of value in use cases where customers start using it, right? And,
yeah.
Again, the reception has been pretty positive so far. And I don't, we have a demo, Cody's doing some demos on the show floor.
Yeah.
I'll be able to see that.
And I think he did one to us when he showed us some stuff as well,
right.
So that's good. So we've seen some of that.
We made it as simple as we could make it, right? I mean, it takes like 2 minutes to set up and then you just use it.
So from my perspective, the bit I didn't like about VVols in the original implementation was the fact that if I was the storage administrator, I potentially have given control over to somebody else to mess about with my box, without having any controls about ring-fencing them as to what they can and can't do. Whereas it seems with your implementation, you've made a VVol as much of a first-class citizen as a traditional volume on the platform, so that as an administrator I can see exactly what's going on.
Yeah, you can see that, and again, we have a big vision when it comes to multi-tenancy that we're going to build in the following months. But overall, there's also another dynamic, right? That, you know, maybe this is another podcast, but what is the role of the storage administrator in the future?
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
So the reality is that, you know, maybe it's going to be a different role, right? I don't believe that the storage administrator will disappear, right? No, no, no. That's what I'm suggesting. But I think it will just transform and become more of a consultant or an advisor.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's definitely one to do for another day, because there's a whole transformational discussion there about whether the guy who used to look after the hardware should now be concerned about the data and actually the content and being a bit more of a curator of making sure that data is looked after.
I mean, so, at the end of the day, in my opinion, the storage should be as invisible as we can make it, and the data is what drives value. The data is what is important. Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the hardware stuff. There was a big focus on NVMe because obviously the platform's now NVMe enabled. But you push that a bit farther with NVMe over Fabrics.
Yeah, I mean, that completes the story, right? I mean, NVMe on the back end, that was the first step. It had obvious benefits because it just removes a lot of translation layer and the way you just, you know, process the data and write the data to NAND. But of course, we have to go the extra step, right? That's where the industry is going. And we've got some pretty smart people working on this. There's some great partnership with Cisco, and this is one of the reasons why we're able to actually do a demo and, you know, announce our intent to support NVMe over Fabric in the near future.
So, if I for the people who are listening, for the end users who are thinking, what is NVMe over Fabric? I'll give you my take, and then you can tell me whether I'm right or wrong. I would look at it and say, in the old days being, you know, the last 10 or 15 years, we use fiber channel as a connection methodology between host and array, and people didn't realize, but actually what we were doing was using the SCSI protocol across that fiber channel network, if you like. Whereas with NVMe, what we're saying is NVMe as a protocol replaces the overhead of SCSI and becomes a much more efficient protocol, and the over fabric piece becomes either Ethernet or could be potentially physically fiber channel too.
Yeah, correct. So the two benefits. One is that it enables you choice of not only having a fiber channel as a transport layer for your storage.
Yep.
Today, that's the best way to, you know, connect a host to a storage array, but also enables you to use Ethernet, right, an Ethernet fabric. And also, there's a lot of benefits really on the host side, because on the host side, you are really cutting a lot of layers. So you don't, you know, you no longer have to go for the multipathing layer. You no longer have to go for the SCSI layer. You no longer have to go to the HPA layer. You're just doing RDMA directly to a target. So all the extra latency that is left in the stack, because I would argue that once you put NVMe on the back end, you have eliminated a lot of overhead that you have on the storage array.
Yeah.
The fabric latency is really negligible, right? Both if you look at Ethernet or fiber channel.
Yeah.
But if you can further decrease the overall amount of work that has to happen to host, and by doing that, you don't only remove extra work, you also get back CPU cycles to the host. so the host, the application, can actually run more cycles.
Yeah, and I guess if you've got big machines that have got many CPUs that want to do much more multi or parallel processing of I/O, I guess NVMe is a better choice for that. And theoretically, from a host perspective, you can also do that too. So if you want to run something that's doing a massively parallel read or write or something like that, then that sounds to me that that's part of what the benefit of NVMe at the host would
be. Absolutely. And again, it's still very new technology,
it
right?
Is.
But overall, I think there's a clear future and a clear path. We're having some very interesting conversation with especially customers that want to build their data centers a bit more like hyperscalers, right? Where they want to have decoupled storage compute and storage layers. There's a lot of interest in that space on NVMe over Fabric.
Yeah. So just to finish that one off, obviously NVMe over Fabric has been used to enable you to connect additional shelves now to a controller. So that was one of the pieces.
Very good point. Yeah, we missed that. So another thing that was part of the announcement is that complementary to the FlashArray X that we announced in April, we also now have what we call a DirectFlash shelf that is just an expansion shelf, and it does not use SAS to connect to the main shelf. It actually uses NVMe over Fabric.
Yep.
And it just makes sense to use NVMe over Fabric because it's like 28 NVMe drives in that shelf. So how can you drive throughput from 28 devices, right? You can't use SAS. It's just impossible.
You have
to use NVMe. of Fabric, and then this is going to enable us to do some very interesting things in the future, right? So there's some interesting architectures and evolutions that can come.
So I'm sure you've got lots of things you're not going to tell us yet.
But I'm one just thing teasing
that,
you.
Yeah, but one thing that was obvious was there was compute power in that shelf.
I cannot confirm or deny that, but there are two controllers.
Somebody said earlier,
some compute is necessary because you need an endpoint for the NVMe over Fabric protocol, right?
Right.
So you need some compute.
Yeah.
But stay tuned.
Yes, okay. So we'll tag that one as a future one to look out for. Okay, let's finish off with the last thing on the list that I've got, and that's the idea of portable snapshots, being able to push data around a bit more, and that idea of packaging a snapshot and being able to do things like pushing it to an S3, a cloud, or whatever. That one I thought was quite interesting because we didn't quite get into the detail of exactly how that packaging occurs in order to make it portable, but it looked like it could have good potential.
Yeah, so I think the first thing that we worked on to make the snapshot portable is how we can offload to NFS.
Okay.
Right? So that was the first thing we've been working on. And once you've done that work, and once you've made the snapshot portable, and once you've built a snapshot that can be restored to any device, then it's fairly easy to say, okay, you know what, I'm not going to put this on an NFS mount anymore, I'm actually going to put this in an S3 bucket.
Okay.
I'm not going to oversimplify that, but that was our first objective. The first objective was really, how can we make this snapshot as portable as possible?
Right.
And then as part of this, we're also making sure that every time we transfer the data, and especially when you want to transfer the data to the public cloud, the data is compressed, is encrypted, and it's deleted. Right? You want it to be encrypted because the security first, but also you want to minimize any kind of additional transport that you want to send to the cloud, right? So once you've implemented this, we will only send unique non-duplicate writes to the cloud, right?
So and how does that then get reconstituted? Because snapshots are great as long as you can see the logical view of the whole volume.
Absolutely. So in the first step, when we put that data in S3, and then that data can also be archived to Glacier if you wish, that data is still in a Purity format. Okay, so Amazon or somebody else doesn't really understand that.
No.
But that's some magic that we're working on, and a bit like the direct shelf that I can't talk too much about it because we haven't done the patents and stuff like that.
Fine.
But there will be a way in which we can actually redirect the data. It will be in an Amazon format because that's how EBS can then consume it.
Of course, yeah.
But then at that point, you have data that you've transferred for a variety of reasons. It could be disaster recovery, or it could be archiving, backup, and stuff like that. But then you actually have data that you can use, right? And the classic use case that we envision is that, okay, I want to do some compute-intensive operations on that data that I can just not afford to do on-prem because I don't have that much compute power.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to purchase compute power for only processing the data 5 days a month or 5 days a year.
So you can push effectively a snapshot to the cloud and then make that snapshot through magic. We'll call it magic for now until we find out exactly how you do it. It comes back into a format the cloud can then consume, and then you can run whatever workload in the cloud against it.
Yeah, but not only that, then the format is open. You are not locked in Pure.
Right.
There's no lock-in, right? And I know that might seem a terrible bad thing for a storage vendor, but from a customer standpoint...
You know, from a customer standpoint, that's more important, because as a customer, I don't want you telling me my data has to be locked to your
absolutely.
Format.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, okay, brilliant. Anything else we should cover? Or do you think...
No, I think it was pretty exciting, right?
Yeah,
a lot of
huge number
stuff.
Of, yeah, huge number of announcements.
I'm having a hard time keeping track of everything.
So how's your 6 months been?
It was interesting, right? Yeah. Very, very different company, very different culture, but overall, you know, been extremely busy, if you can see, and it's been very exciting.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks for joining us, Ivan, and look forward to catching up with you on some of those new announcements as they come out.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Okay, thanks.